The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, more football. Liverpool get first win at Arsenal in very long time, while Gunners lose yet more players, now have roughly same number of defenders as Robbie Savage. Meantime, Man City dispatch Trotters with silver bullet, and Chelsea stumble past West Brom but have the matter in hand because they signed him. That's his name, Juan Mata. Sid breaks off from staring bleakly out of his legalist window to tell us what Chelsea fans can expect. Also today, we'll be talking about the Tyne-Wear derby, the championship, Luka Modric, post-tweet, and Robbie Keane making a who'd have thought it dream debut at LA Galaxy. All of that in today's Football Weekly. All right then. Hello, everybody. Today's Football Weekly. On board, Greg Ruffley.
Hi, James.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay, yeah.
Excellent. John Ashton making his season debut.
Hi, James.
Good to see you back, John.
Good to be back.
Great news. And Barry Glenelg, good to see you back, good to be back, etc.
I'm in crisis.
Are you? Why?
Because I've just realised I'm eating chewing gum. See? Oh, and okay. I shouldn't be.
You shouldn't. All right.
And I have nowhere to put it now. I'll just leave it here on this pad.
That'll be fine.
That says QPR had one shot on target, Everton had 14.
Yeah. Very interesting. If a tree falls in a forest and it doesn't get mentioned on Football Weekly, did it really fall? That's my question. While we think about that, let's start off today's pod with Man City and their second straight win at Bolton this time. Very entertaining once again. Has this Roberto Mancini fellow, has he turned over a new leaf, has he?
It looked that way. Watching the game yesterday, it was a very exciting match, end to end. Nothing like Man City last season. I think Silva was just, he was just fantastic for City yesterday. There's so much more movements up front. Even in midfield as well, there was a lot more creativity. Gareth Barry, who a lot of people are critical of, I thought he had a decent game yesterday. Some goal. Apparently, Ray Wilkins said it had a lot of swaz on it.
Yeah.
Which, if you look at Urban Dictionary, actually means bum sweat.
No wonder
a goalkeeper didn't want to go near the ball if it had a lot of swaz on it. So, you know, that's the future of football.
Hey, swaz. Tell you what, analysis you wouldn't find in another podcast. No.
Maybe that's why Jeskalainen spilled the first as well. There was a bit too much swaz on that one.
Yeah.
I thought Jeskalainen's jersey looked like it had a lot of swaz or something on it. It was a very peculiar colour, which I don't think is becoming of a professional footballer.
All right.
It's kind of magenta, cerise kind of thing.
I'm just wondering what kind of bottom would produce swaz of a magenta or indeed magenta hue. Having said that, I'm not really comfortable with this conversation at all, so I'm just going to ask. Yeah. I'm just going to say, still, so far they've played newly promoted Swansea and Bolton, so let's not get too carried away. Remember Chelsea last season, how they started, how everyone thought, oh, bets are off, etc. And look what happened to them.
I think that Dzeko looked really good for them yesterday as well. I think that's a big improvement for him because he was still getting to know the game in England last season. I think this season he's looking like he might be a more permanent starter. But I mean, just look at the squad is so strong to have Tevez on the bench and be able to take Aguero off and replace him with Tevez. Whether he's going to be there or not, it's just embarrassing almost. Maybe a little bit depressing that they've got such strength and other teams haven't.
Well, I thought at the start of last season they might well have had the best first 11 of any of the teams in the Premier League. And this season I think they have now got the best squad. And they've got players that are more acclimatised. And if Mancini can find a way of stitching them together, then they'll be the team to beat, I think.
Yeah. Greg, you were at the pub watching Arsenal Liverpool.
Yeah, not far from the Emirates.
About two miles
away. Yeah, and I watched it. And I thought Arsenal were particularly unlucky. It was a very close match. Nothing seems to be going their way. And it showed that I think this race for fourth place will be very close between Arsenal and Liverpool, providing Arsenal don't sink like a ship and maybe sack Wenger and go into real crisis mode, which I don't think they're at yet.
Or providing Arsenal don't buy three good players this week and suddenly turn it around, and by next May we'll be laughing about all the early season predictions of doom and gloom. So a quick word on Liverpool, because it was their first success since when? Away to
When Titi Kamara scored, I think in 1999. Yeah, about 11 years ago.
All right.
So I thought Liverpool played reasonably well. I mean, they're not clicking yet because there's so many there's so many players being kind of, you know, acclimatised, and they're getting used to playing with each other and stuff at the
moment.
That's
the problem, you think. But Dan Smale asking about Newcastle selling Luis Enrique to your lot.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, for $6 million, which is what they bought him for. Why didn't they ask for more when he's clearly the best left back in the Premier League? Is this due to a slide clause in the Andy Carroll deal?
He only had 1 year left on his contract, so I think it was, you know, the price was reflective of that. But he was fantastic. I thought Martin Kelly was really good at right back as well, and I think he's better than Glenn Johnson.
All right. Gareth Lewis wants to know if Liverpool would be better off without Carroll.
I mean, it's still very early days to judge Carroll. His problem is his price tag. He's got a £35 million price tag, and it's not particularly realistic, and everyone knows he's not really worth that. But sometimes I think having him up front when Suarez isn't there, Liverpool can they want to play a long ball to him sometimes when they shouldn't, and they, you know, play other football. But I don't know. I think it's still too early to judge him.
All right. You know. What about Arsenal though? On Saturday, Wenger looking, he was doing the Hodgson head rub.
Yeah.
I saw at one point.
Yeah.
All beginning to get a bit much. Red cards, more injuries.
The fact that it was. There was torrential rain didn't help either, because he just made him look more and more forlorn, like, you know, a really wet, fed up dog or something. I feel sorry for him. He doesn't do himself any favours, but he's getting an awful lot of grief, which I don't think he deserves, considering how much he's brought to the Premier League party. If it wasn't for him, no one in this country would eat pasta.
Arsenal, yet another red card. And yet more injuries. Koscielny now. I've got to ask, what's going on? What's going on in their training ground? They had two players pulling up with a hamstring midweek. John, I'm looking at you.
Because I know what's going on at Arsenal's training ground.
There's obviously, I mean, Man United, similar issues. It's the first 2 weeks of the season. You shouldn't have players pulling up with
back spasms.
Back spasms.
These things, I mean, yeah, they happen, don't they? I mean, I don't know if there's any underlying reason
for it. They're being trained too hard, aren't they?
Possibly. These people know what they're doing. You know, they're sports,
I don't know if they do. That's the thing. You always say, well, they know what they're doing, but I'm not sure that they do. That bloke who, the Dutch guy who worked with the Welsh national team says that they don't know what they're doing. And as time goes by, you have to think that he might have a point.
It's sort of, I mean, it affects Arsenal more because of the thinness of their squad and this whole sort of narrative of them not signing players. And I think the fact that it was Liverpool that beat them at the weekend is sort of psychologically damaging, particularly because if you look at how Liverpool have gone about things over the last sort of 8 months or whatever, they've been the team that have spent money and they've caught up with Arsenal. Arsenal haven't spent money and they've sort of dropped back towards where Liverpool are. And that sort of contrast, I think, is particularly stark for the fans.
Arsenal are having no luck at the moment either. I mean, just before we came in to record this, it emerged that Wenger has been... got another two-match touchline ban for infringing the apparent conditions of his last touchline ban in the Champions League, which is absolutely ludicrous punishment. There's a very good chance they might lose against Udinese on Wednesday, and their next game is
Manchester United.
Their season could be over by September, you know.
Depends what you define as their season. I mean, they might go out of the Champions League. I think with Van Persie back and Gervinho will be available for that game, they should have a decent chance. They didn't concede an away goal at the Emirates.
The other thing is they weren't awful against Liverpool. They played pretty well, and they looked to be heading for the draw until Frimpong got sent off. So, I mean, they've got a chance against
And even
United.
Then it took a freak goal to unlock...
A goal which you'd say, well, Suarez was offside, but it was so marginal that the linesman just didn't see it.
There's not much between the two teams, and neither of them look like they're going to be challenging for the title.
I think it showed that race for fourth place will be a close one between Arsenal and Liverpool. I mean, the fact that Liverpool brought Morelos and Suarez on just showed that the squad's stronger as well.
And even if they lose to Man United, they'll still be in the race for a top four finish, which I think is a decent result. Do you think they're going to buy? Barry, I was reading your rumours this morning. Arsenal in for a couple of French players, uniquely enough, or players from Ligue 1 anyway, the Belgian Eden Hazard and Yann Mvia.
Yes, defensive midfielder in Villa, and Hazard's an attacking midfielder, winger.
Right.
If I was him, I would just, for pig iron, not buy anyone till the last day of the transfer window and then just go get a 12-year-old prospect from Bordeaux or something. What?
Right, great.
I was just going to make one final point about Liverpool, and just something on my mind. Dalglish, when he first came in, a lot of people questioned whether he was a bit of a dinosaur, played 4-4-2, and would be able to kind of be a modern-day football manager. every game that Liverpool are playing, it's difficult to predict what formation they've got. And there's, again, with in the Arsenal match, there's just three midfielders who were Kout, Henderson and Downing, who were just switching all the whole time, which makes it very difficult to predict. And I just think this season Liverpool will be very hard to predict from one game to the next, and that could be something which is particularly a good point for them.
All right, excellent. On the subject of Arsenal and whether they have any money, Andrew Fife emailing Sean, actually, with an incredibly lengthy and well-researched email about how Arsenal apparently make $4 million a game, according to Forbes, from every fixture at the Emirates, and so it's ludicrous that they're not spending any of that or the money they got for all these previews, etc. But there's still 10 days left in the transfer window.
But the thing is, people seem to be saying, you know, they need a defender, get Phil Jagielka in. That'll solve all the problems. Phil Jagielka, while a good player, was pretty much responsible for Everton getting beaten by QPR at the weekend. You know, so.
All right. Now, meanwhile, at Stamford Bridge, a 2-1 win for Chelsea against West Brom, quite a contrast to this fixture last time around, which was 6-0. The Baggies scoring their first goal at Stamford Bridge since 1989. And boos at half-time when the visitors were still 1-0 up. It's a bit early for boos, isn't it?
A lot of booing, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, they'd have booed at full-time had they lost as well. And it's like, it's his, you know, first home match for Chelsea. Players are still getting used to each other. Chelsea have got there's two Chelseas almost. There's the evolutionary Chelsea when Torres is in the team, which is trying to go somewhere, but they don't seem to be able to win with that Chelsea. As soon as Drogba comes on and the old guard are kind of find the winning ways and know where each other are, they win games. So I mean, that's his big problem, I think. But Bilbao is taking Chelsea forward with these old players there and still getting results.
Quick mention for Shane Long, first goal against United, now one against Chelsea. Very impressive, as was this tweet from Alto Ryan. Good performances, says Alto Ryan, with a little bit of artistic license here, from three players this week: Long, Gian and Silva. Yeah. Anyway, right. Charles Rose says Chelsea were awful against West Brom. We resembled a machine, washing in a machine, revolving, spinning and confused. Mata and Modric can't arrive soon enough. Well, Modric, interesting, isn't it? Monday night, after this pod is recorded, we'll see Spurs playing at Old Trafford. But Modric didn't travel with them because his head's not in the right place, says Harry Redknapp.
Yeah, normally his head is on his shoulders, just in the middle, perched where most people's heads are, but apparently now it's
somewhere else. I thought maybe they could ask Gladstone Small for he never let that interfere with his sporting career. But anyway,
I find that a bit odd. Is his head genuinely not in the right place, or does Redknapp just not want to pick him and is
Redknapp
with a view to selling him on, and is sort of putting the blame on Modric rather than himself?
I'm willing to guess that none of us know here.
Yeah.
No.
Right. Well, it was more of a rhetorical question, than anything else.
Well, there you go. The other rhetorical question one might ask is whether the arrival of Juan Mata will actually mean that Chelsea aren't interested in Modric anymore. How's he going to fit into the lineup? Can he and Malouda play at the same time? Is he a bit like David Silva? All questions we might be asking Sid Lowe in a second. I'm sure he'll be desperate for a call. Poor chap, he's had nothing to do all week. John, you wanted to add something about
I just wanted to big myself up, going back to Shane Long. I think if you look at my championship players to watch in about 2008-2009, I had fingered him as a go-to guy.
Yeah.
That the other 10 have sort of sank without traces. Largely, yeah.
Hey.
Can be ignored.
All right. Just out of interest, Tris McBride says, has John finished his alphabet dating yet?
No, I need some. Actually, it'd be a good chance.
Yeah.
New season and all that.
Yeah.
I need some other sort of dating gimmick, because alphabet dating, it's just not happening anymore.
Why? Why is it not happening
anymore?
Well,
it's just, you know, it's been, you know, it's just ground to a halt.
So
on what letter?
So you began alphabet dating to inject a bit of spice into your relationship. And now you need to inject more spice.
Different kind of spice.
It's lost its spiciness.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. That's true. Yeah.
Well, have you considered going to a swingers party?
We didn't get as far as S.
All right.
How's Rachel feel about this?
I haven't told her. She's off today. So
because she's quite a hard woman, I imagine she'd sort you out if she knew.
She does boxing training and that.
Yeah. I've sparred with Rachel, and
have
she's
you?
Yeah, she's got a fierce right on her. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Nice one. All right, John. Well, listeners will no doubt be eager to try and help out in any way they can. Good. That's it for part one. On the line in a second, Sid Lowe. Right, part two. It's Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, Sid. Just as I was when we rang you just now and got your levels and that. And you're well too, and you went to see some second division reserve football this weekend.
Hey, what are you calling reserve football? It's second division B, proper football. Although it is true that in that second division B division, a number of reserve or youth teams play. For example, Atletico Madrid B, Real Madrid B, Rayo Vallecano B. But this was proper first division, well, first division football. Proper second division B football. Real Oviedo against Leganés.
Right. Duly noted, Sid.
Sid, with the top flight football sort of postponed this weekend, would it be fair to say Mrs. Sid was probably looking forward to doing something that didn't involve Real Oviedo?
I think she knew well enough in advance that it was going to involve Real Oviedo. As soon as the strike was off, I was like, brilliant, that means we can go and watch Real Oviedo at Leganés.
Unlike John Ashton, it looks like you don't need any help spicing up your relationship. listen, Juan Mata.
Yes.
Yes, the player.
Yes.
Yeah. How's he going to fit in at Chelsea? Can he and Malouda play in the same team? Is he anything like David Silva? These are some of the questions that hungry listeners want answered.
He's similar to Silva in a sense. I don't think he's quite as... he's not quite as skillful as Silva. He's not quite as quick-footed as Silva. I would argue as well that he's essentially not quite as good. That his final little diagonal pass is not quite as good. It's interesting because at Valencia, they've always played, or at least they have for the last few years, with a 4-2-3-1. With that line of three behind the forwards having a lot of interchange between them. And, of course, at times, that has included Silva and Villa. Silva and Mata and indeed Villa, although he's normally been the furthest forward of them. But generally speaking, Mata has played on one of the two sides, hence the question about Malouda. That would naturally be his position coming in from the left. But one of the things that was so striking about his performance at European Championships at under 21 level this summer was that he played as the central of those three players and was really involved in absolutely everything. Dropped a little bit deeper, was much more of a kind of all-round creative playmaker. And I suspect, although I suppose it depends what happens with the Modric deal, that may well be where he ends up with Chelsea, that rather than being on either side of that line of three, that he might well end up in the middle of it. I think he's a very good player. He's reasonably quick. He reads the game very well. His passing's good. Over the last 3 years, he's basically averaged around 20 goals, more or less, as his contribution for each season. 10 goals scored and 10 goals provided with assists. I think he's a very good player indeed.
Excellent. All right. Mike Hennessy says, are you speaking to Sid? If so, ask him how Getafe are advertising their season tickets this year.
Yeah, this is brilliant. I imagine a lot of people have seen this already. To put it in a nutshell, let's provide the context first. The context is that a lot of Spanish clubs do this. A lot of Spanish clubs produce adverts at the start of each season to try and encourage people to buy season tickets. And in a way, you know, the adverts have become irrelevant in terms of actually people buying season tickets. It's just a way of getting people to talk about them and being as kind of, not necessarily as outrageous as they can, but being as kind of attention-seeking as they can. And the very famous ones fundamentally have tended to include Atletico Madrid. But Getafe over the last few years have tried really, really hard to do things and do things that really stand out. Well, this time they've certainly done it. The advert essentially starts with the premise, which is that we know that no one supports us. We know we've got virtually no fans. We've got the smallest stadium in the first division, and yet even then, as a percentage, that stadium is still less full than any other stadium in the first division. So what we need to do is get some new Getafe fans. Now, we realise that's difficult, so the way around this is to create Getafe fans of the future. So you Getafe fans who are around now, you need to create lots of babies. You need to go and donate sperm. Then it moves on to the next scene in which the Getafe supporting sperm donator maybe has a little bit of a problem providing his donation and therefore breeding a whole new generation of Getafe fans. So we've helped you out by providing a Getafe zombie porn film in which a load of Getafe zombie fans will basically get jiggy, and this ends up with a huge big row of pots of sperm filled with Getafe supporting sperm that will, of course, create a whole new generation of Getafe fans.
I have to say, I was disappointed.
They are wankers, James. We've always known it. Now we know for sure.
Yeah.
Sid, I've seen this ad, and... Mm.
They're not zombies, for a start.
They're not zombies.
No, they're all girls as well.
Zombies sort of conjures up this notion that, you know, decaying flesh and eyeballs hanging out.
No, you're right, because they described them as caliente zombies, you know, hot zombies. But it's more sort of a, you'd sort of more describe it as a kind of, I don't know what you describe it, it's sort of a space-agey sort of thing, wouldn't you?
You would. They're kind of zombies. But the whole thing had a slightly kind of Robin Asquith feel to it, you know. Confessions of a zombie caliente type thing.
but I remember, sorry, that when Charlie Brooker of this parish had his zombie Big Brother thing out, I can't remember the name of it, but him and...
Dead Set or something.
Dead Set, yes, and Simon Pegg, who was in Shaun of the Dead, and they had a sort of an ongoing row over whether or not zombies can run.
Right.
But
okay, thanks for
the zombies in Getafe's...
Whether or not zombies could run, was that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Why wouldn't they be able to?
Well Simon Pegg insists that zombies can't run, but Charlie Brooker says they can.
But surely these two were not just slinging nonsense to each other. They must have given a reasoned argument as to why zombies couldn't run.
Okay, I've got a reasoned argument right now. Surely the kind of degenerative damage to a brain and the motor functions that have led to somebody becoming a zombie in the first place, not exercising free will or cognitive thought, would also massively impair your ability to coordinate your limbs and said motor functions to the extent of running, which is a lot more complex.
That is true. However, I think there's been plenty of footballers who've demonstrated that you don't need cognitive thought to be able to run around a lot.
Great, okay.
So when is this strike in Spain over?
Speaking of zombies, we don't know for sure yet. There are talks today. I think there's two sets of talks due today. I think there's a set of talks as well on Tuesday and Wednesday. The hope is that the league will be able to start in week two, because if not, they're going to start having really big problems of finding dates to fit these games in. So that's the hope. The problem is they're starting to get really nasty with each other, the two sides. And I think while they're talking about saying, well, we're talking and we're getting closer, not only are they being nasty with each other, it's very difficult to see how there can possibly be an agreement, because basically what the players' union want is something that I think the LFP probably can't give them.
Sid, two quick things, although they're both massive topics. One is, Hattenbaum's wondering whether anyone in Spain has actually put together the whole strike issue and the clubs lacking the cash and the inequality of the TV deal. Has anyone joined those dots at all?
Yeah, of course they have. But more than that particular issue, what's been talked about is the other big problem that faces Spanish football financially, which is that when teams go into administration here, it doesn't bring any sporting penalty with it. So rather than administration being a problem, it's been seen as an opportunity for a lot of clubs. And of course, administration, what it allows you to do by definition, is not pay off all of your debts.
Yeah.
So therefore, players are going unpaid, and so are other clubs.
Second question, Zombie Caliente wasn't the stupidest thing I saw this week on YouTube. What was the TVE report on the post-game or the closing minutes injury time brawl between Barcelona and Real Madrid, which painted Mu as the innocent victim of a slap from Tito Villanova. I'm just wondering, has there been any kind of disciplinary reaction to all of that?
There has. I must say, I think Barcelona have... Barcelona, I think, have got this wrong as a club, and more to the point, as a president. The president, Sandra Rosset, has sent a letter to TVE complaining, and so indeed has one of the TV councillors in Catalonia has sent a formal letter complaining as well. Now, the reason I say this is a mistake is because they both sent letters accusing TVE of deliberate manipulation and therefore demonstrating their bias and demonstrating the fact that they're out of order. Now, I think there's a couple of things that are worth pointing out at this stage.
One of which is that
that's two dogs going for each other. One of which is mine. I don't know whose the other is. One of which is the fact that deliberate manipulation, I think, is an extremely strong accusation, and that's come from Barcelona's TVE. To try and put this into context, now I don't know exactly how this works, obviously, because I'm not on the sports desk at TV, but this is TVE's news channel. This is a game that finished at 1:30 in the morning, knowing the kind of, quite frankly, the constant cock-ups from TVE that happen in all levels of their coverage. I find it very hard to believe this is deliberate manipulation. I think it's more a case of 1:30 in the morning, the images come in, someone's got to put together a two-minute piece, someone who's not necessarily a football fan, hasn't perhaps seen the Mourinho thing, goes through the images, cuts a couple of things, puts it out. Then, of course, because it's a news channel, this goes on a loop all night. The other thing that I think is worth noting here, which this is what I find really bizarre, Barcelona as a club have said nothing in terms of formal complaints about what Mourinho did, nothing in terms of formal complaints about anything surrounding the game, and yet they send a massive formal complaint to TV, the state broadcaster. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's choosing your enemies in a very strange sort of way.
Certainly is. Sid, yes or no, did Mourinho get off scot-free?
I think he will.
OK. Listen, if the Federation of Players and that, if they ever do come clean about the match fixing, do get back to us on that, yeah?
Well, I will do. I think what will happen, as has happened before, whenever match fixing evidence or suggestions of evidence have appeared, what will happen is what always does, and that's absolutely sod all.
All right, then. Listen, best of luck for this week, then, hey? And we'll be catching up with you soon.
Fantastic.
Thanks very much, Sid. Yeah, it's a big topic, that, isn't it? Deputy President of the League saying, oh, that match-fixing thing, we all know about it, why don't you come out with it? But we had to move on, sadly, at that point, because we've got Sunderland Newcastle to talk about, amongst other things. Barry?
Well, it was a game I predicted Sunderland would win and win comfortably.
Yeah,
and
that can happen. That's predictions for you.
Yeah, well, I've got a lot of stick, much of it deserved, to be fair. My predictions this weekend weren't great. I predicted Liverpool would fail to beat Arsenal. I predicted Sunderland would win easily. And So it bodes well for Spurs in their game against United tonight.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
But it was a weird game, actually. Neither team were particularly good. Sunderland outplayed Newcastle in the first half, but should have gone a goal down and a man down after Seb Larsson deliberately handled on the line to keep a Joey Barton attempt on goal out. And then Sunderland just didn't turn up for the second half. They were absolutely awful and deserved to lose in the end. Could have been five or six red cards in the game. I think Larsson should have gone. Cattermole should have gone. Again, he's a moron. He just doesn't seem to have any football intelligence whatsoever.
Can he run?
Not very fast. He can certainly lunge with both feet, if that's any good in a zombie film. And Bardsley did get sent off. So, yeah, but it's a terrible result for Steve Bruce, and I think patience with him is beginning to wear exceedingly thin on Weir's side.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Everton, meantime. 1-0 defeat by QPR. Tommy Smith, the scorer. Well done to Queen's Park Rangers, who bounced back nicely from their opening defeat, and now with new ownership. And Neil Warnock saying, we're going to get four or five players in by the end of the transfer window, but what are the prospects for the Toffees, Greg?
It looks really bleak for them because they've got absolutely no money to spend. I still think the squad's good enough to
do. You think they'll still have that squad in a week's time?
Well, this is the point whether they'll have to sell players or not. Which I think David Moyes would he might like to get a player out, sell him, and get the money back. But I mean, if the bank's going to take that money and just put it back into paying the debt off, then it's not worth it. And they just need to keep this squad of players together for this season, and try and finish in the mid table. I think they're capable of finishing in the mid table. So, but it's a really dire situation financially for them, because I mean they didn't even enough sell out most weeks. They get punters in through the door, and it just shows you how kind of broken modern day football is, that you can fill your stadium and the wages are just too much for a club like Everton, which is well supported, to sustain. So it's quite depressing.
Jawad Lauria, I might have said that wrong, who was at the game, says, do you think Moyes' time is up? Players lack motivation. He played a 4-6-0 for part of the second half. This is when he took off Beckford and put on Fellaini, and the Everton fans reacted quite angrily to that.
Yeah, I mean, they have struggled with strikers anyway, and Fellaini can score goals, and perhaps he just thought physically they did try and attack him aerially instead. But yeah, I can understand why they're frustrated. Seems like a very defensive thing to do at home. But I mean, who's an option? Who's better than Moyes if they were to sack him or get shut of him? Moyes, he goes. I don't know. So can they afford to get a decent manager in as well and pay him?
Yeah, indeed. Ross Barkley looked good though, didn't he? Just 17.
They bring through good young players at Everton, and they've had to, because they can't buy anybody. I mean, it's really, there's a point made that Ken Wright said, we've given Moyes £5 million every year to spend, which is peanuts in the modern day game. But he has done exceedingly well with that £5 million every year, the players he's brought in. But it looks like there's nobody out there now that he can bring in for that kind of money anymore. Not that, and he hasn't even got £5 million for the start, So
it's very bleak. Aston Villa beat Blackburn. Raul still hasn't signed for them. Swansea, Wigan. yep. Vaughan. He's looking like quite a signing, isn't he, the goalkeeper?
Oh, he was a good penalty save. He had a good game at City, even though he conceded four goals.
Mm. And Wolves have made it 2 out of 2 now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hats off to them.
Hats off.
They were top of the league for the first time in something like 57 years until City. You know, about they were top of the league for like 90 minutes basically yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of. Wolves have played 2-1-2 and done well in both games, and say West Brom have played to lost both. And I thought West Brom probably deserved at least a point from both their games this season. Mm. But they're still sort of anchored rock bottom with no points after two games. It just shows that there's not a huge amount of difference between a lot of those teams.
Well, except there was a fair amount of difference in their opponents. Was probably
yeah,
the key thing.
That's true. Mm.
Right, that brings part two to a close. Part three's on the way, though, just in time. And all sorts of delights in that, including John Ashdown on the Championship. Part three, then. No Italian roundup, Barry, because the league hasn't started. Oh, hang on. Daniel O'Byrne says, who's your tip to win Serie A this year? AC looking the best bet to me so far. Mexes and Ty were decent signings. Two defenders coming in there at Milan. The story, I don't know if you may have mentioned this on your...
I think I did. Raul, or not Raul, sorry. Kakar going back to Milan.
Yeah, going back to Milan, but not Milan is the twist on this now. Latest reports have Marco Branco, transfer head honcho at Inter, in Madrid today, trying to snap up for 30 million, the Brazilian playmaker for Inter. That surely can't happen. Berlusconi was saying, oh, we've always talked about Kaká finishing his career here. I wonder if that might be the spur to make Milan come back in for. Oh, Ricky, we'll see. By the way, Eto's still not gone to Angie.
Is Aquilani looking increasingly likely to go to Milan?
As everybody's quoted, yeah, I'm close to Milan.
For 6 million? Is that
that's a real bargain.
That's a proper bargain. I think he's a good player. There's not space for him at Liverpool anymore.
Right, why? Because he's Latin. Is that the problem?
Well, no, I mean, he's a really good player. It's just, but actually, maybe that is. Yeah, he's too good looking.
Is that?
Yeah.
He looks a bit like Harry Potter.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've got
strange taste in
men.
Put him in the same team with Pirlo, you'd have a really interesting kind of Potter-esque... you could recreate the... John, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
I know Potter. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks exactly like Severus Snape.
He does, yeah. Who'd be Ron Weasley, though? That's the...
Let's have a think about that. Scholes, really, but he's no longer involved.
Risa, John Arnorisa.
Oh, yeah, fair shout. Mm. We could go a long way with this. I'm thinking that Voldemort's going to be a little bit more difficult to cast, but Colina, you know, maybe if he was the referee, you could have Colina as Voldemort. This is the kind of
Karen
meme.
Brady is Heather Watson.
Oh, my goodness.
Am I the only person in the world who has never read a Harry Potter book or seen a Harry Potter movie?
Yes.
Right.
Quite possibly. Not that that's a bad thing. Championship. John Ashdown. What about Southampton, eh?
Yeah, 4 wins out of 4.
Whoa.
It's strange. I mean, I've been on holiday for sort of 3 weeks. So
where'd you go?
I stayed at home in my bedroom. and... It's like coming into when I'm on holiday, I do avoid football as you know, with working with it most of the time. And it's like I've walked in on a film after sort of I've missed the first 10 minutes, and it's who's here and what's going on and
all right.
Who's the
you're
bad
here
guy?
To do our championship?
Yeah,
round
yeah. Well, actually, I've looked at the table and Southampton and Derby are top of the league, 4 wins.
Right, but you've
four.
Not seen how any of this happened.
I've had a reasonable look this morning to see what's been going on.
What else can I tell you? Ipswich lost 7-1 to Posh.
Yeah, amazing result, particularly as Peterborough are going to be or widely expected to be the whipping boys of the division all the way through. And if you watch some of the highlights, the defending for particularly the 7th goal was incredibly shambolic. Paul Jewell said it afterwards, that it was the Ipswich manager, said it was the lowest hour of his career.
Really?
Given some of his history. yeah. It's pretty low.
Right, okay. But Southampton, what do you think? Can they hang on in there? Is it just one of those kind of early... Is it
they've maintained the momentum from last season. I'd be surprised if either Southampton or Derby were in the top six come the end of the season, I have to say.
Well, that's a big... interesting, because Derby as well, 4 from 4. Yeah.
Didn't Ipswich concede 5 in their previous game?
I think you're right. I think they did.
So that's 12 goals in 2 games. That's not good.
It isn't. I think we can all agree on that, even those of us who have been away for 3 weeks. Yeah. Brighton did lose their perfect record. With Kevin Phillips, we were discussing him. enthusiastically last week. He scored both goals for Blackpool. Good. There you go. Oh, West Ham Leeds. Did you see that?
Yeah, no, I saw a bit of that.
Okay.
Decent game.
All right.
Good advert for the Championship. West Ham still haven't won at home for goodness knows how long, which is the pressure's mounting a touch on Sam at the bowling ground. And the other big game of the weekend, of course, was Leicester Forest with the two ex-England managers. Mm. Load of controversy there. Leicester 2-0 up at the City Ground with just over 10 minutes to go. And Matt Mills gave away a controversial penalty for a handball. Kasper Schmeichel was then booked for complaining. Says afterwards that he didn't realise he was booked. So after the penalty went in, lobbed the ball away sort of towards the stands and was booked again and sent off. And the 10 men of Leicester failed to hold on, and it was 2-2.
It was interesting to see Sven-Göran Eriksson off his bench and actually remonstrating angrily with the manager. He didn't look like the Sven of old. He looked like... It was a bit like Walcott. Did you see Walcott having a go at the ref at the Emirates?
It's probably a PR thing, isn't it? Change the image a bit. A bit nasty.
Yeah.
Well, he's taken a leaf out of Paolo Di Canio's book, who was sent to the stands this weekend. The big A420 derby between Oxford and Swindon in League 2, which Oxford won 2-1. And Paolo, lost his rag. He's actually on the front page. I printed this out before I came in. It was the front page of the Corriere dello Sport website.
Mm-hmm.
Big pictures of Paolo Di Canio, but I don't know what the headline means.
Okay, let's have a look. Slide it over here, friend. What was he sent to the stands for?
He was out of his technical area, having been, I think, already warned about coming out of his technical area.
Right.
And he said that he wanted to celebrate. First one, he was celebrating the goal. Mm. And the second one, he was remonstrating with an offside decision.
Right, okay. It says, Di Canio, fury on the bench, but the Swindon get KO'd once again. Interesting picture of Di Canio there with his arm aloft. Good.
In the traditional style.
In traditional fashion. It's not going well for him there, then.
No, I think they only had one win. Oh. Slow start, but they seem to be sort of there. I mean, he's still sort of putting the squad together, so there's time. League One is the division to be in at the moment.
What makes you say that, John?
Well, that's where Sheffield United are, so wherever we are is clearly the place to be.
Okay.
One of the great things about League One is that it's got Notts County in it, which means it's got Martin Allen in it. I don't know if you saw last week his appeal on the Notts County website. Manager's message on Thursday after the pod. Good afternoon. This is the text that I'm reading out. I'm not just saying good afternoon. Sorry. Good afternoon. I am desperately trying to find somebody that can teach me to whistle. This may sound like a joke, but I can assure you it's not. This is not for my dog. This is for me to whistle from the technical area. Any ideas, please let me know ASAP. Regards, Martin. This is an official... release on the Notts County website. He's
I could teach him.
An entertaining
could you,
guy.
Can you teach me how to whistle? Because can I tell you,
yeah,
that not having a tattoo, two of my greater kind of greatest insecurities as a guy. I mean, yeah, that's a whistle, but I can't do that.
That's a proper coaching whistle as well. Yeah. I mean, everybody can go.
Andres Villas-Boas is very good at whistling. He could teach him to whistle.
Trapper Tony, your Ireland manager, is the world's greatest managerial whistle.
I had to put my fingers in my mouth to do that. Yeah. My ambition is to be able to do that. As a friend of mine at home, Conchi, he can do it without using his fingers.
Does he have all his teeth?
So impressive, yeah.
Okay.
He used that was a four-finger technique as well. Some people can just do it with two.
Right. Listeners, what's your technique for producing a high-pitched whistle to call your players' attention? Do let us know on the message boards. But interesting, Barry, you reckon you can teach that to anybody? How does Martin Allen suggest that people get in touch?
You have to email media@nottscountyfc.co.uk.
Right. There you go.
Could be a job in it for you, Barry. Yep. You could be his whistle monkey.
Yeah. He could just... I could stand beside him in the dog, and then if he needs to whistle at someone, he could just nudge me and I'll whistle at him. And then he could gesticulate.
Alavenga.
There must be an app for that.
I could be his number two.
On his phone. Yeah. Yeah, all right. Cool. That's not it. There's still a little bit left at the bottom of this barrel.
Is there really?
Yep, there is. As Michael Gaffney says, Jimbo, what's the pod's view on Robbie Keane at LA Galaxy? Debut goal, great lifestyle, surely better than Blackburn or Leicester. Well,
did you see the goal, by the way?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Describe it for us, Greg.
Well, some lump at the back. The ball was coming. All he had to do was head it.
Beckham provided the assist.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a wonderful ball, obviously. No, I mean, it was just a ball. It was a ball over the top. And this defender, all he had to do was head it clear. He kind of let it go over his head, turned round, tried to clear it, missed the ball, it bounced. Robbie Keane kind of jogged through, you know, probably like he does these days because he's got no pace. The goalkeeper came out, only had to take it, kind of froze and in fright, you know, at this superstar who was coming through, and Keane just kind of ran past him and then just tapped it in. And then he did that lame celebration that he does where, you know, he kind of does it.
Yeah, now he's in LA. Do you think this whole gun things is quite the thing?
Well, yeah, you've got to be careful over there, haven't you?
Yeah.
Isn't it a bow and arrow?
No,
it's pistols.
Like it's pistols, yeah. Which, you know, the blood and the cribs and all that, you've got to be careful.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And M17 Latino gang they've got over there. I know all this because my brother lives in LA. So.
Does he?
Yeah.
Has he been to see Galaxy? Is he tempted now that Robbie's there?
I don't think so.
But, all right.
Yeah, you know, I might go over with him next
time. Perhaps, if you do, you could stay up and give us a report on the podcast, unlike Steve Busfield, who went along and then went to sleep instead of talking to us on the phone.
It's not the first time he's fallen asleep on the job, is it? Yeah. Remember, he once admitted it when he was on a blog. Yeah, he was
late night cricket.
Yeah. I think it was. He said, "Oh, sorry. Can anyone tell me what's happened? I fell asleep as he was actually down on the rota doing a shift." Yeah. So.
What a pro!
I mean, you got to respect that.
But I mean, Keane is getting grief in Ireland in some quarters for going to LA. If you had the choice of going to LA and earning $3 million a year.
Oh, for sure.
Or going to Leicester.
Especially it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Score goals that easily.
Pardon?
Especially if you can score goals that easily.
Exactly. I don't think he's anything left to prove, really, in his career. He's a good player. He's past his prime. And
he'll score a hatful of goals over there and enjoy himself, I imagine.
Well, that goal was against the San Jose Earthquakes, Barry.
Uh-huh.
LA Galaxy continuing their romp towards the playoffs. Is that right?
Well, I believe they're 6 points clear of the Eastern Conference.
Ooh.
They've won 14 games, lost 3, and tied 9.
Did you say in the Eastern Conference?
Or the Western.
Oh, Western, okay, no. Yeah.
David Beckham is now joint top of the MLS League of Assists with 11. And Juan Pablo Angel, the player moved out of Galaxy to make room for Robbie, he scored for Chivas USA this weekend. I'm all over MLS.
Right, and you do know how to whistle, don't you, Barry?
And I know how to whistle. Mm. Can I give you one stat, actually? I meant to mention this during the Newcastle-Sunderland bit, and I forgot.
All right.
Lee Cattermole, in 149 Premier League appearances, has accumulated 51 cards, so he just needs one more for a full deck.
Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. Anybody else got any other bits that they forgot to mention earlier?
Okay, I'll tell you what I could mention. I think this is my last Football Weekly before I get married.
Yeah. All right.
I don't think I'm on next week, so.
Right.
You know, wish me luck. I went out last night and I'm quite hungover today because my best man wanted to test out his material on me.
Okay.
And he frightened the hell out of me, like. So,
Okay.
So wish me luck. You know,
good luck.
Yeah.
And good luck to Mrs. Ruffley.
Oh yeah. Well, she
need a lot of luck.
I'm going to become Mr. Bukowski.
Are you? Mm. You're changing your name. She's not changing hers.
Modern man. Yeah.
What? My wife didn't change her name.
Mm. Well, I'm not going to do it immediately, but when, you know.
Why are you going to change your name?
Well, if we're going to have children and stuff, I think we'll just have to, you know, sing off the same hymn sheet. We'll have the name. So, and I'm not all that connected to
it's
the Ruffley
name. It's a
more
exciting name, anyway, isn't it? Bukowski.
Bukowski, yeah.
Your children could go up to be sort of cops and.
I mean, it's not set in stone yet.
Poets.
Yeah.
Drunks.
They're going to have a better future with Bukowski, you know, at the end of the day.
Have you secretly always been wishing to ditch the monkey on your back that is the surname Ruffley?
Yeah, and then hide from the world, you know, under a new name.
Anyway, now, that's it for today. Thanks, Matt Hill. And thank you, Greg. Very best of luck. What date is the wedding?
3rd of September.
All right, then.
An international weekend. So no one will be checking the phones when we're in there.
Magnificent. John Ashdown.
Cheers.
Barry Glendinning.
Thank you.
And you, the listener. You're welcome. We'll be back on Thursday. Enjoy your week till then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.